Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. If you're a member of the Muslim community, you may have already heard of something called a MAR contract, or Islamic Marriage Certificate. It is a document signed by the soon-to-be bride and groom, and it details, in part, a gift made by the husband to his wife. The gift can be valued at more than $100,000, so you can imagine that there is an obvious connection to personal finances. This is something that's becoming more common in Canada, and Shulman and Partners is taking a closer look. For more on how they work, we're joined by family lawyer Laura Paris. She's in Bolton, Ontario. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
I am well. I saw this come across my computer screen, and I thought, huh, I have never heard of the MAR agreement. Can you tell us what it is and how it works?
Yeah, so I won't purport to be a full historian on this, but I will give you a high level of what my understanding of the background of this is. So it is a religious contract, and it is, as you said, something that comes up in Islamic law. From what I understand, the laws, traditionally, the laws in Islamic countries did not provide for similar property divisions to what we see here. So women were almost at a disadvantage. To an extent with respect to anything that may happen in the event of a separation from their marriage. So the MAR contract was put in place essentially to provide a means of support for the wife in the event there was a breakdown of the relationship, whether it be by virtue of a divorce or even just the death of their spouse. And again, this is just a kind of an added protection to add on to what the law already provided for them to ensure that there was some adequate support, whether by way of property or otherwise, to allow them to continue on with their life absent their spouse.
How does this work here in Canada? So you reference this as being a religious contract. Do the courts here recognize this agreement?
We do. So the courts look at these contracts in the same way they would as any other domestic contract. So when we're determining how they play into our laws here, the first thing that we want to determine is whether or not it's a valid contract. And in determining whether or not it's valid, there's three requirements. It needs to be in writing, it needs to be signed, and it needs to be witnessed. Those are the three basic requirements of a valid domestic contract. In the event we are able to determine that it is that the agreement is valid, it's then the next step to determine how that contract or what the implications of that contract are on the way that we interpret our laws. So in a lot of cases where we see this contract coming up is in how we're dealing with property division for our clients in the case of a separation.
And how can you play that example out a little bit? How would that work?
Absolutely. So, for example, let's say that there's different ways of drafting these types of contracts, but let's say the contract is very simple in that it sets out an amount that is payable to the wife in the event of, a separation of some sort or at a later date. Just to kind of backtrack for a second, the way that these contracts are set out is that it's an amount that's payable upon demand. So it may not be necessarily triggered by the date of divorce. It could be triggered by other occurrences. So there are different nuances that you can put into these contracts. But let's assume that we're talking about one that is only becoming payable upon, or it's being requested to be payable upon, the date of divorce. Where the case law is going with this is that it's showing us actually including this as an asset to the wife and a debt to the husband as of the date of separation. So the implication of that is it's going to reduce what the husband's net assets are, and it's going to increase what the wife's net assets are, and as a result have an impact on what the ultimate equalization amount received is. So where we're seeing a lot of disputes on this is a lot of people want to see this contract actually being dealt with separately from the provincial law. But in order to do that, the agreement actually has to specifically state that it's intended to be excluded. And this is where we're seeing a lot of the disputes involving this contract.
you use the terms husband and wife. And of course, we know for the last almost 20 years in Canada, same-sex marriages are both legal and pretty common. Is this something that really does still live in a gendered world?
In terms of the terminology, or do you mean these types of contracts still coming to be?
Could two women or two men sign a MAR agreement?
So from that perspective, I will be frank, I do not know the answer to that question. I do believe that it would be in line with Islamic law. So where our laws have gone in terms of the advancements that we've made over the last 20 years in Canadian law, this particular contract, this MAR contract, is subject to Islamic law, which is religious law. So I will be frank that I don't know what the advancements of that law are and whether or not this would be something that applies to a woman and woman relationship or a man and man. From the research that I have done, I've only seen it referred to dealing with a husband and wife relationship.
We've used the word gift a number of times here. It details a gift made by the husband to the wife. Does that word carry legal weight, or is it in this context synonymous with an amount?
So again, it depends on actually how the contract is drafted. So you could specifically set it out in a manner that refers to it as a gift for the purpose of having it excluded from any sort of further property regime that may be applicable at the time of separation. But the language that is included in these agreements is key. And I think this is where people need to be informed, and people need to realize that while these are religious contracts, and it may not be a contract that you actually sign with a lawyer, it still does make sense to have a conversation with a lawyer before entering into these types of agreements to understand what implications this could have in the event of a separation, and if there is any language that should be included within these contracts at the time of marriage to ensure that you're protecting yourself at a later date.
Where does this fit with a prenup?
I would say it goes hand in hand with a prenup. The only difference I'd say between the two is one is based on religious law and one is based on provincial law. So, but the two pieces go hand in hand, and they are treated more or less in the same way as a marriage contract. The only difference that you're going to see is that one is subject to and is based on religious law, and the other is based on secular government or sorry provincial law.
This is an anecdotal, or looking for an anecdotal answer here versus a statistic, but how common are these agreements in the Muslim community?
As far in my experience, I would say they are very common. I have not in my practice dealt with a Islamic separation that did not include a MAR contract. That said, the way that they actually play into these separations varies. A lot of people do simply deal with it separately from their separation that we deal with based on provincial law. So I haven't necessarily dealt with it often in the context of my role, but I do often see them come up, whether or not I have to specifically deal with them.
We used the $100,000 number here just to illustrate the magnitude. What have you seen in terms of amounts that are commonly included here? I can imagine it is a very wide range depending on the economic circumstances of the couple.
Exactly. You can see numbers that are, as small as, if you consider it small as $10,000 or, as high as $300,000. It's also not always a dollar amount. I've seen gold bars being a term of a MAR contract. I've seen property being a term of a MAR contract. So it really depends. And these again are terms that are come to by the parties at the time they enter into the marriage. And it's actually a requirement of a valid marriage under Islamic law to have this agreement in place.
And you're seeing them mostly on the dissolution of a marriage.
Correct. Yeah. And again, and I think that's where people need to be informed that it is it is actually quite valuable to have a conversation with a family lawyer going into a marriage if you are entering into such a contract.
Well, and let's broaden this out here. If you're entering into a marriage, period, full stop, we know the stats are against you. A very high percentage of marriages do end in divorce. So let's say we can park aside the concerns some couples would have about even talking to a lawyer. It should be all about the love. It should all about be it all about choosing our first home together and all about those magical things. But it's not. It is a contractual arrangement at its base. What are the top two or three things that a couple should ask themselves and consider papering in a legal context before they walk down that metaphorical aisle?
So I would say probably two main categories of things to consider. One is property and assets that you have that you may be bringing into the relationship and looking to protect. This can include assets that personally belong to you or assets that you expect to receive by way of gift or inheritance later in life, maybe that belong to your family. The second piece would be having an understanding of support and potential support implications in the event of a relationship ends. So if you are a higher income earner and you earn significantly more than your spouse, having a term within a potential, you know, marriage contract or cohabitation agreement that deals with or restricts and limits the amount of support that you may be exposed to at a later date is certainly something to consider. Unfortunately, these contracts don't deal with any sort of parenting issues. So while these may be conversations that you may still want to have, nothing within one of these contracts dealing with any sort of parenting arrangements or support for children is actually enforceable. So while you can technically include it, it would not be enforceable at the end of the road.
Really interesting stuff. Laura, thank you for joining us to talk about this.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Laura Paris is a family lawyer with the firm Shulman and Partners, and she was here to talk about the Islamic marriage certificate. It's called a MAR contract or a MAR agreement, something I had not heard of, and one of those things that would be really important to research before you sign on the dotted line.